Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined once again by my co-host, the man with the plan, referred to only by the one and only Paul Shields. And I don't know why I said referred to by the one and only Paul Shields, because that's your full name, but there you have it. And after 2.5 weeks, the Isolation Series is back. Thank you so much to everybody for your patience. We had some other commitments that got in the way of us doing some shows, but here we are. First things first, Mr. Paul Shields, I want to jump in and give you an opportunity to tell people about the development of Wellbeings Performance. I know that with every passing week now, there's more and more developments with Wellbeings Performance, both on the website and traveling and doing seminars and things like that, almost to the point where you're catching up to me in the seminars department now, I think, already. So why don't you give everybody an update on the status of Wellbeings Performance?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like anybody who runs their own business, working hard, just going where the work takes me. And I'm lucky to be busy. I'm lucky to have the opportunity to work with good folks and, you know, just finished a really big project, or I shouldn't say finished a portion of a big project that had me away for a couple weeks. So it's exciting to be back. I'm happy to be talking sports and entertainment and anything else we want to chat about here, because it's been hectic. So it's nice to get back to a little bit of a more regular schedule.
Yes. I want to start off today's program and get your thoughts on WrestleMania 40. As of today, it is, I believe, 34 or 33 days until night one in Philadelphia for WrestleMania 40. And this past Friday in Glendale, Arizona, it was announced in the promo at the beginning of the show what everybody was talking about, that on night one it's going to be a tag match between Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes going up against Roman Reigns and The Rock. What are your thoughts on the developments that they've been able to do in the last couple of weeks with this storyline? And what do you think we're going to get out of the tag match in night one? Because as I have mentioned on this program before, I think one way or another, we are still going to set up a long game for SummerSlam, where we're ultimately going to get a true head-of-the-table showdown of Roman Reigns going up against The Rock, because The Rock somehow helps Cody ultimately finish his story by screwing over the bloodline in those 2 days.
Yeah, I think that if, like we said initially, with the Rock playing the heel right now and aligning with the bloodline, and trying to sort of take away Cody Rhodes' opportunity, and the way that they've spun this, the way that they've redirected the story here, I think they've done a really nice job in pivoting to something that is infinitely more interesting. The Rock has been incredibly entertaining. He's playing into, not only is he playing into what the fans wanted with how much they love Cody, he's also sort of touching all of those nostalgic notes of The Rock as a heel. He's sort of playing the hits while still progressing the storyline. And I thought it was really great. I think you're right. I think that Rock is doing a little bit of babyface master plan. He's a little bit of a double agent here, because even though the way that he sold the stipulations for the match on night one of WrestleMania impacting night two of WrestleMania, and the tag team match impacting the main event, I think that it gives a very clear advantage to Cody Rhodes. Whether they win or not on night one, The Rock has put himself in a situation to either stop the Bloodline from interfering and causing Cody the belt, or keep them away from it entirely by, you know, losing on that night one. So I think that they've done a really good job of setting up the big storylines in a lot of ways, but this is the biggest one. They've done a nice job of setting it up. They've done a nice job of giving people something to look forward to without telegraphing the outcomes, while still leaving some doubt as to what could happen in both matches. And I think that wrestling is most entertaining when it has a fraction of real life that's then turned into surreal story. And I think they're doing a nice job of that. So looking forward to the way that it develops, looking forward to, you know, Cody answering Rock's challenge or answering Rock's counter offer this week on SmackDown. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they're headed from here.
On that same note, since we last did a show on the 15th of February, they had the Elimination Chamber take place in Perth, Australia. We know that largely the reason for that is the unbelievable star power that is Rhea Ripley, and it was an absolutely global success. The fans went absolutely crazy. Grayson Waller, I thought, was very, very well used with his Grayson Waller effect. And even at the media event the night before, or the after, or rather, what are your thoughts on what we saw in the Elimination Chamber? Because two things that I took away from that premium live event was, number one, and we talked about this off air, but number one, Tiffany Stratton is going to be a huge star for this company for the next however many years. She just has it and can actually work in the ring for a unbelievable amount of time. I was very impressed with her. It was the first time that I really got to watch her work, and she actually sold me on it, whereas a lot of other talent don't really sell me necessarily on the overall wrestling package of it, but she has the entertainment and wrestling down really, really well. Not sure how old she is. Can't be more than 24, 25, I would think, at most. So she has a very bright future in my estimation. And I don't know if you agree with me on this either or not, but I felt that the tag match between Pete Dunne, Tyler Bate, and Damian Priest and Finn Balor was one of the best tag matches we've seen in a long, long time. And I put it right up there with the WrestleMania 35 NXT TakeOver tag match between the then War Raiders, Aleister Black and Ricochet, and I forget who the other team was, but that's how impressed I was, because that match stole the show on that night, in my opinion, all those years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I thought overall it was a good show. I thought the crowd really made the show. There was no, I would say there was nothing on that Elimination Chamber for me that was 100% had to see. I think that, you know, the star power of Rhea Ripley was absolutely on display, and putting that in the main event was the right call. I thought that was a well-done main event, and again, the crowd really pushed it over the top. I liked some of the spots in both the men's and the women's chambers. I thought there was some good work done. The tag match I enjoyed as well. But, you know, overall, I thought that it was a predictable show, but in a good way, in the sense of the stories that they're telling make sense as we head to WrestleMania and as we head to the final, you know, month into the biggest show of the year for the WWE. They've really paved the path that we're going to take there. Now they've got some work to do to, you know, keep it exciting and keep it interesting and keep it moving. But I was really, really impressed with the I was impressed with the setup and the crowd in Australia. I thought the WWE did a really good job of putting on a massive event there, a stadium show, a proper stadium show. And it's good to see events over the world. I think they're getting more and more global each year with these stadium shows, and it's exciting to see.
Sticking with the wrestling theme for a moment, last night, by all accounts, we saw Sting's last match. And over the years, we thought that we've seen Sting's last match because he got injured with spinal stenosis, but he went against doctor's orders and ended up working with Darby Allin and a few other talents in AEW. What did you take away if you saw any of the highlights from the match last night? The crowd was certainly into it, and you can't deny what Sting has been able to do throughout his career. We've talked about it here on the program multiple times. But do you believe that we have seen Sting for the very last time as an in-ring competitor?
Yes. Yeah. He's, what, 60 plus now or whatever, however old he is. His run in AEW was exceptional. They did a wonderful job protecting that character, and teaming him with Darby Allin made a lot of sense. It helped turn a very exciting performer in Darby Allin into a much more polished performer. And you can see that in a lot of the way that Darby Allin works now. I watched the pay-per-view. I thought it was quite good. I did enjoy the match. I thought that they did a lot of insane things during the match. And for those people that you know, criticize the Young Bucks, I thought the Young Bucks were incredible. They played the role of heels perfectly in this match. And it was very, really nice to see. Very cool moment. Very fitting in Greensboro, North Carolina. Just everything you could have wanted in a retirement match for a legend like Sting. He was a lot of people of our age group's favorite wrestler, and he was some of our favorite wrestlers today's favorite wrestler, you know. So it's he'll go down as one of the greatest of all time, and I thought it was a fitting way to end an incredible career.
Do you find it interesting? Interesting is the wrong word, but it's the only word I can come up with at the present moment, that they still put Sting, or not Sting, excuse me, they still put Ric Flair out there, and he was taking a couple of bumps. I mean, you know, regardless of anything, we know that Ric Flair's been through a lot. And he's lucky to be alive still based on what happened about 3 or 4 years ago and whatnot. And we know that he loves the business and that he still needs a paycheck because of other reasons and different things like that. But every time I see Ric Flair go out to a ring now, I'm a little concerned. I don't know if you feel the same way that I do.
Ric Flair might be the only blemish on what I thought was a perfect storyline leading into Sting's retirement match and the whole story they told. I have no interest in seeing Ric Flair anywhere near my TV for various reasons, never mind his health and safety and age and all of the things. But I like Ric, to me, even the fact that Woo Energy or whatever sponsors AEW and is shown on some of their broadcasts, it diminishes my enjoyment of that product. I am not at this stage, from what we know about Ric Flair, from what we know about not only his health, but his attitudes, you know, his whatever you want to call it through the course of his career, he does absolutely nothing to build enjoyment for me. I do not need to see Ric Flair on my TV ever again. And if I could block out a certain portion of the entire build of Sting's retirement match and the match itself, it would be anything including Ric Flair.
Okay, I'm glad we agree then, for various reasons. Moving from sports entertainment to sports itself, a lot has happened, obviously, in 2.5 weeks, and we are now just 4 days away, actually technically 3.5 days away from the NHL trade deadline, and we've seen a lot of things happen in 2 weeks, including but not limited to Chris Tanev, getting acquired by the Dallas Stars, and Elias Pettersson signing a long-term 8-year contract extension with the Vancouver Canucks. But more close to home, the Toronto Maple Leafs reacquired Ilya Lyubushkin from the Anaheim Ducks. Ilya Lyubushkin played, I believe it was 32 games a couple of seasons ago after being acquired from the Arizona Coyotes. But then the other night, he ended up going out, I believe, in concussion protocol. I don't know if there's an update with regards to him going into tonight's matchup versus the Boston Bruins at the Scotiabank Arena. But what are your thoughts on the trade deadline approaching in less than a week now? Some of the moves that I have highlighted, whichever way you want to take it, and more specifically, Ilya Lyubushkin and the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, I think that, you know, the Lyubushkin acquisition makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. The Leafs are very injured right now on the defensive end. You know, Mark Giordano looks like he's headed to LTIR with a concussion after a collision on what was that, Thursday night or last
Thursday,
week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's tough for an older player to be dealing with that. And Timothy Liljegren just returning from an injury. So they had to run out. They've had to run out 6 left-handed shooting defensemen more times than you'd like to. You'd like to have a little more balance on your D. So I'm not as up in arms as some people are about the Lyubushkin trade. The Leafs needed right-handed defensemen. Lyubushkin is on the more defensive and more of the tough. He's more of a physical and defense first type player. I think you have to ignore some of the numbers. He was playing on Anaheim, and Anaheim is atrocious. You know, you don't have to look very far on the Leafs lineup to see another player that was very similar, a guy like Simone Benoit, whose numbers were not good last year with Anaheim, who has played very well for the Leafs. So I don't think Lyubushkin is a needle mover. I think that he is he's a 6th or 7th defenseman that gives you depth, particularly on the right side, where you've lost Connor Timmins. And, you know, Liljegren's dealing with injury. Brody has played much better on the left side. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them continue to right-handed defensemen in the trade market as we lead into Friday. But, I think that it's a trade that needed to be made for the Leafs, but it doesn't impede them from doing anything else. So I think it makes sense when you look at what injuries they're dealing with and where the need is, right, for this Leafs team.
Do you believe that we are going to see either one of Jacob Markstrom or Noah Hanifin traded by the deadline?
Yeah, I don't think Noah Hanifin's sticking around. To me, I think the tea leaves all say that he is not re-signing, and I don't think Calgary is going to let the deadline pass without getting something for him. I don't know what that package looks like, but Noah Hanifin's a very good player, and he's, you know, one of those right-handed shooting defensemen that a lot of teams are after. So I'm thinking that he is he's going out. I don't think Markstrom is being traded. I think that if you're trading a player like that, it's probably an off-season move. And Markstrom also has a limited no trade, so he has say in where he gets to go. He also isn't an unrestricted free agent. There's no rush. And Calgary has been playing better of late. And while I don't think it's enough, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think if you're trading away a guy like Markstrom, you're punting not only on this year, but on next year and the year after. And with guys like Kadri and Huberdeau under contract playing better, you know, looking ahead, this might not be a full type of rebuild situation. This might be more of a retool, and it would really help to have a great goaltender, a bona fide starting goaltender to do that. So while you still have him under contract, while he's still playing well, I don't see Markstrom being traded. Of course, stranger things have happened, and I'm going to guess that if the New Jersey Devils just for example, come up with some crazy package that you can't say no to, then Calgary is going to do what's best for their team. But I think what's best for their team is to keep Markstrom and retool on the fly for next year.
Even with promising goaltender, I think it's Dustin Wolf sitting in the wings.
Well, they've got Dustin Wolf and they have Dan Vladar, but I think they're going to be really patient with Wolf. I think that he's a very good goalie and he's going to be an NHL goalie. I just don't think that there's any rush. Let him continue to play well. And the truth is that in this season and the end of last year, when there was injury, when there was opportunity for him to play, he didn't look particularly good at the NHL level. That's not to say that he'll never look good at the NHL level. I just think that, you know, goalies take time and you got to be really patient. And he looks like a very good goalie. So I think that a little more time getting comfortable, maybe a little bit of time splitting duties with a goalie like Markstrom or like Vladar, whoever they decide to keep around, it would be better for a player like Wolf. And so I think, again, with that player, you're looking ahead.
Do you believe that Kevin Cheveldayoff quietly could win the deadline for a Canadian team because he was able to acquire Sean Monahan and Winnipeg is playing some of its best hockey that they've played all season? And it reflects on sites like Bet99 and FanDuel and Bet365 because as of right now, they are the favorite as far as Canadian teams go to push towards the Stanley Cup final, even surpassing the Edmonton Oilers by a smidge currently at this moment as we do today's show on Monday, March 4th, 2024.
No, I'm not ready to give Winnipeg that kind of credit yet. I like Sean Monahan. He's a good player. But you got Vancouver, who went out and got and added to their defense with the Zadorov. They added to their depth scoring with Elias Lindholm, and they just locked up Elias Pettersson for another 8 years. So, look, Winnipeg's playing some really great hockey, and I think that you have to consider them an absolute threat to come out of the West towards the Stanley Cup. That's not a shot against Winnipeg, but if we're talking about winners of the deadline before we've even hit the deadline, I look at a team like Vancouver before I would go to Winnipeg. I also think that we have to be really careful with what the betting odds say the favorite is, particularly when it comes to teams with very rabid fan bases. See the Toronto Maple Leafs as a perennial contender for the Stanley Cup. And while I believe that they have the talent and I believe that they are a team with the ability to do so, they've won one round in 20 plus years, right? So I'm always a little bit skeptical when it comes to that. Odds makers are smart. They know where the money's going to come in, and they know how rational and irrational Canadian hockey markets can be. So while I don't think it should be completely dismissed, I also think we need to be careful when we look at some of the odds, particularly for teams that aren't, you know, the Vegases of the world. And the teams that, you know, Vegas and Colorado and even Tampa Bay, who have been winning Stanley Cups and who have been making some noise in the playoffs for many years.
Okay. I want to get your thoughts on another interesting topic that I've been throwing around the last couple of days. There's no question that Zach Hyman is having a career year in Edmonton right now. He scored a couple of goals just yesterday on the tail end of a back-to-back, I believe it was, against the Pittsburgh Penguins to get his goal total up to 42 now, I believe. My question to you is, I know he plays a lot with McDavid and Draisaitl, and that helps anybody, no doubt about it, like when Jordan helped Pippen and Harper and all of those players on the Bulls back in the day as well. But do you believe that this is an outlier season for Zach Hyman, kind of like what we saw with Jeff O'Neill when Jeff O'Neill scored 42 goals that one year, I believe it was, in Carolina? Or do you think that because of who he's been playing with the last couple of years, it's really elevated him to elevate his game, and we could see him become more of a 30-goal scorer on a regular basis?
Well, I think this is his second year being a 30-plus goal scorer. He gets to 40. Zach Hyman, I would not say this is an outlier. While he might never be a 40-goal scorer again, and who knows, right? The NHL scoring is going up, and he's a talented player who plays with talented players, so it's completely possible. I think that, you know, between 30 and 40 every year should be attainable for a player of this caliber, and he is an outlier in the sense that even at his age now, which we tend to see players start to decline in skills, he's continued to get better and better. So I think there's an argument to be made that this could be his best season, but I don't think you're looking at a huge drop off. This is a player that has consistently grown his game, and he has the ability to play with good players. He understands how to play around some of the best players in the game. And I know that that sounds very simple, but if you look at when he was with the Maple Leafs, he did his best work playing alongside Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner, right? With Edmonton, he has done an incredible job of playing off of, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid and Nugent Hopkins and pick whoever you want. He's a very smart player. His skill set has grown from a forechecking, playmaker into a difference maker, a first line power play type player, who is a top six forward and probably a top left winger on basically every team in the league, save for one or two, right? So that's a high compliment to give a player of any player. And I think that Zach Hyman's done a great job to get there. And I don't see him falling off a tremendous amount. Of course, as you age, we all know what happens, but I think he's still got a couple good seasons that are going to look similar to this one coming up.
Speaking of age, that's a great segue into another person that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. Since we were on the show back on February 15th, has your opinion changed at all in the Pittsburgh Penguins looking to potentially move Sidney Crosby? Because the noise has picked up by insiders all around the NHL more and more, and even Crosby in a scrum earlier today said that he doesn't know what's going to happen as it approaches Friday, which is the first time that he really admitted that, but he's focused on winning and not necessarily getting traded. We know that at his age of 36, going to be 37 later this year, he has yet to show a drop-off. He's having one of his best statistical seasons, if not his best statistical season in his career. So if you are heading into the deadline, no matter what team you are as a buyer, do you at least make a call on Sidney Crosby?
I don't think Sidney Crosby's going anywhere. I'm sure people are calling, but there are too many signs pointing to him staying there. He's been there for so long. I just don't see him going anywhere. So no, my opinion hasn't changed. My opinion hasn't really changed about the Penguins. I think they're bad. I think they overestimated where their underlying, where basically everybody south of Sidney Crosby, where their playing abilities were. They went older instead of going younger. They spent more money on players like Achari and Graves and Carlson and Riley Smith. That's not a detriment to any of those players, but they tried to get, you know, more playoff experience and take one final run at it, and it's been nothing short of disastrous. This team looks terrible. So,
how much of that, in your opinion, falls on former Leafs general manager Kyle Dubas? Because we know that Kyle Dubas had not such a ceremonial exit from Toronto last year, and he very quickly signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins after that falling out clearly with Brendan Shanahan. How much of it falls on Kyle Dubas in his first year in Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, he's got to take some of the blame, right? Like, he goes out and signs those players and trades assets for Erik Karlsson and whatnot. So there's, I mean, he has blame to, there's blame to be passed around, but we also don't know what was coming from ownership, right? That like the pressure could be on the edict might have been to, you know, take one more stab at it with Crosby and Letang and Malkin. So we don't know what's coming down from above Dubas, but for now he's got to wear it, right? He's the president. He's the acting GM. So as of today, 100% of the blame falls on him. But, you know, we know how these things go, right? We know how the workings of teams go and what ownership groups have to say and yada, yada, yada. So it's not as simple as who's to blame. But as of right now, Kyle Dubas wears the blame for that.
Moving to the National Basketball Association, what are your thoughts on the Toronto Raptors now only being three games out of a play-in spot, with 25-ish games to go in the season? I believe we saw the other night that star Scotty Barnes is likely out for the rest of the season with a broken hand that he sustained against Golden State. And yesterday, Jakob Poeltl apparently seemed to sustain some type of injury as well. So they're dealing with a lot of things. But if you are that young group, if you are RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley and Darko Rajakovic, respectively, do you still make a push to close that gap of 3.5 and make it into the play-in? Or do you go the other way because they're just a couple of games away from keeping their top six protected pick going into the draft, apparently, if they lose a few more games? So which way, if you're Masai and Bobby Webster in that brain trust, are you looking at doing, even though we know that all athletes, all professional athletes want to win and strive to win and strive to get into the playoffs and reach the championship? But based on the fact that if they lose just a couple more games, like I said, they can get that top six protected pick for this upcoming draft. That could really help Scotty and RJ and Emmanuel with the development of this rebuild.
I don't think you have to do anything other than go out and try and win basketball games, because I don't think this team is good enough to make the play-in. So I think they're going to end up outside, the outside looking in, which will give them a good shot at a pretty good pick. And if they manage to, put something together and get into a play-in, then that's just experience for a young team that's trying to come together, trying to get better. All the things we know about the team they are now. So there's not going to be any, no team, regardless of what we think as fans, no team goes out there to lose. What happens is a management group pulls away parts, right? You look at teams, I don't know, like look at the NHL, a team like San Jose. Their players and coaches don't go out there to lose, but they also didn't trade away Erik Karlsson last year to get better. Right. And the Raptors are in a similar situation. They made some trades to go to a younger team that needs to grow and get better. Their biggest star is injured, and now you got to go out and play the games and see what happens. So I don't think that they're I don't think they're concerned one way or the other. If they get into the play-in, they get some that playoff type experience. They get to see what it's like to be under the microscope for some players who haven't been there before, some players who have. And if they don't, then they look ahead to potentially getting a good pick, an early first round pick that could help them in the very near future.
And just to finish off this Monday, March 4th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series, former American League MVP and former Toronto Blue Jay Josh Donaldson announced his retirement from Major League Baseball after 13 seasons. Any thoughts on Josh Donaldson calling it a career? We know that the couple of years that he was in Toronto, he was at his peak as far as his playing ability and in his prime, hence him winning the 2015 American League MVP and being only one of two Toronto Blue Jays in history to win the American League MVP, the other being, of course, George Bell in 1987. So, any thoughts on that? And also, keeping with the retirement theme, Jason Kelce, brother of Travis Kelce, announced his retirement as well from the National Football League after 13 seasons. I believe he was a nine-time All-Pro selection, and went to many, many Pro Bowls, and of course, winning the Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles when they did the Philly special with Nick Foles just a few short years ago.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Donaldson goes, as a Jays fan, he provided some pretty electric moments and was part of some pretty amazing teams. First time in a long time we had that playoff vibe in the city, that magic that comes with playoff baseball in Toronto. I have a lot of time and a lot of love for what Donaldson did in a Blue Jays uniform. So all the best to him. And boy, it's hard to dislike the Kelce brothers. You know, I saw a little bit of the clips today from Jason Kelce announcing his retirement, and what a battler, what a warrior, an incredible career. You know, both guys obviously, you know, earned praise at the end of their career as they head into retirement. But, you know, two unique characters, and one that hits close to home here in Toronto with Donaldson. And congratulations to both Josh Donaldson and Jason Kelce on wonderful careers.
Yes. And do you believe that Jason Kelce will land with CBS or NBC or Fox or anything like that?
He'll do whatever he wants. He's shown the ability to do so. I don't know. I think that when you're in his situation, he's got the podcast that's become incredibly popular. He's a family man. So I don't think that a guy like that has any rush to go to, you know, he just left the longest job he's had as an adult. I don't know if he's got a big rush to get back into any other work, but that's totally up to him. Obviously the doors would be open, I think, for a guy like that. He's certainly shown the ability to do so. So I guess we'll wait and see, but I don't know. I didn't get the sense that he was in a big rush to jump back into anything.
Special shout out to him as well, because they were showing some clips during his announcement press conference today of him at the Super Bowl parade from a few years ago when he dressed up seemingly like the genie from Aladdin and got everybody hyped. And I forgot how fantastic he looked during the parade. Plus, he might have been a little blasted, if I'm being honest with you, too, which was hilarious.
Think, you know, like all sports, in my opinion, are better when you get to see the personalities of the players shine a little brighter. And I think the Kelce brothers, both of them, have really made it, have made a point of making football fun. Right, making it inclusive for fans, bringing in fans that never would have been there before, and of course, you know, the Taylor Swift connection does a lot of that, but they just do a good job of being ambassadors for their sport, and all pro sports are better when we get to see a little bit of personality from the players. So it's a lot more fun than the robots, you know, who give 110% and yada yada yada. I think that, you know, we're gone are the days where that should be the norm. I think that having players with personality and platforms to express their personality in a way that they want to, I like that. And I think that the Kelce brothers are a great example of that.
Special shout out, tip of the cap before we end today's show, to Eric Madison and Toby Swanson. Eric obviously is a current relief pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. His 4-year-old son, Toby, unfortunately got hit by a car last week in Florida and ended up in the intensive care unit. He is still in the hospital, but is out of intensive care, hoping to go home in the coming days. And we know how difficult it is for anybody that has to deal with their son or daughter or friend or whoever, brother, getting hit by a car. But when it's a 4-year-old child, you know, it just magnifies it that much more. And when you are a professional athlete, you know, and the microscope is on you in different ways, it adds more stress because you want to be there for your family. And obviously he's been given all the time in the world, but he also knows that he needs to get ready for a season 2 that is coming around the corner. So again, my hat off to Eric and Madison and definitely Toby for their resilience as a family and as individuals. And Toby, we are sending all of our love and support your way, little man. We know that you're going to continue to fight and do your thing. Any thoughts from you, Mr. Paul Shields?
I think you said it well, Spence. Of course, we're thinking about the Swanson family, and we wish for a speedy recovery. And, you know, as much as we'd love to see him back with the team, obviously family takes priority. And so get the family healthy, get everybody on the road to recovery. And there's lots of baseball to play. You know, 162 games is a lot of games. So there'll be time to see him back in the lineup. But yeah, all the best to the family, and fingers crossed.
Is there anything else on this Monday, March 4th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series that we should cover that we haven't, my friend?
No, I think that's a great way to be back. It's nice to be back. Nice to be chatting sports and entertainment, and we'll do it again much sooner.
Yes, we'll do it again some point later this week leading into the NHL trade deadline itself. Hopefully we get some interesting moves by the NHL clubs themselves leading into the trade deadline, because very rarely do I feel bad for, you know, Nick Kiprusoff or anybody that is an insider for the NHL, except when it comes to NHL trade deadline day, when they seemingly are on TV for about 47 hours, including our friend and friend of the show, James Duffy. So I hope for their sakes that there's some movement so that they're not scrambling so much on TV on Friday.
Well, fingers crossed, but honestly, I don't feel bad for them. They're fine.
Okay, great. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been your Monday, March 4th, 2024 edition of the Isolation Series. And as always, we appreciate you watching and or listening wherever it is that you are doing so. And we appreciate our sponsors, without whom we wouldn't be able to do this as often as we do. But until we come at you again later in the week with another episode, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.